I'd call this meeting to order, the Senate Special Committee on Trans-Alaska Pipeline System Throughput. Let's let the record reflect, it's 15:30 on Tuesday, February 26, 2013. We're in the Butchovich Room, 205. Let the record show, we have a quorum to do business. Co-Chair Dunleavy, Senator McGuire, Senator Fairclough, and Co-Chairman Michicki, Senator Gardner. I'd also like to note the presence of Senator Giesel in the room, and would like to recognize our committee staff, Nancy Jones from Senate Records and Claire Gross from the LIO. I'd like to also remind everyone to please turn off your cell phone. The purpose of our meeting today is to have our first hearing on Senate Bill 59, which is the governor's bill on oil and gas exploration development areas. Presenting the bill from the DNR will be Commissioner Dan Sullivan. And Commissioner Sullivan will first be discussing statewide permitting reform and the governor's initiatives. And then Mr. Bill Barron, with Director of Division of Oil and Gas, and Wendy Wolf, Division of Oil and Gas. Before we begin, I'd like to let you know today's meeting will end no later than 4:30 p.m. and Senate Bill 59 will be back before us on March 5th. So, Commissioner, if you can please join us, identify yourself for the record, and begin when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Sullivan. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources. And with me, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, is the Director of the Division of Oil and Gas, Bill Barron, and Wendy Wolf, one of our top oil and gas officials in the Division of Oil and Gas. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to provide just a brief overview of the governor's permitting reform efforts that are taking place not only during this legislative session, but also in the last year and a half. And I'm going to make it brief because I'm looking at the committee, and I know that I think most, if not all, with the exception of Senator Gardner, has seen this overview. Senator Dunleavy saw it this morning, so on another bill. So. I will keep it very brief, but again, we think it's important to put this bill into the broader context of what the administration has been trying to do with regard to permitting reform. That's included bills, but it's also included budget authorization, and we wanted to put that in the broader context. This is the third bill that the governor has introduced during this legislative session. That focus on different elements of permitting reform and modernization. And if I can, I'll just go very quickly through these overview slides because I think, again, the broader context for the committee's insights to see how this bill fits with some of the other bills that we're working on. So, again, I think most of the committee members have seen this, but the point of this slide, Mr. Chairman, is this is a bipartisan, really a national effort that's going on in different states. Former presidents, magazines like The Economist are all focused on the need for permitting reform, modernization throughout the United States. It's happening in many different states as politically diverse as Massachusetts, California, Wisconsin, Kansas, Alaska. And we think it relates to the big issue that many people saw, which was economic development can be strangled by overregulation, and every one of these bullets touches on that point. We also see it as an issue that affects our competitiveness, both as a country and certainly as a state, and therefore that's another reason that we think it's very important and something that we've been focused on the last couple of years. We also want to emphasize up front that this is no way detracts from the states or the administration's focus on keeping the highest standards on protecting the environment. We think we can responsibly develop our resources, undertake timely, efficient permitting reform, and still have some of the highest environmental standards in the world. And we've seen where investment in Alaska is pushed to other regions. You actually harm the global environment because you go to basins, oil and gas basins like Russia, where their standards are way, way lower than ours, and the environmental degradation that happens doesn't help the overall global environment at all. So we think we can do this by maintaining the highest standards. Perhaps this is the most important slide here, Mr. Chairman, for this committee. As you know, we've briefed the administration's strategy on turning around tax throughput. This committee's obviously been focused on taxes. But if you look at the part on the left here, the strategy with regard to tax throughput, turning that around, the second element of that, the first element is more competitive. That relates to oil tax reform. The second element is ensuring that the permitting process is structured and efficient. And I think what Wendy and Bill Barron will do is focus on why we see this bill as doing just that. And also, permitting reform is a big part of our strategic and critical minerals strategy, and it really relates to everything else, gas line, Cook Inlet energy. Everything focuses in many ways, comes back to the issue of making our system more timely, efficient, and certain. This has been the state's strategy for the last 2 years.
Could you just go back a slide and outline why TAPS is the first committee of reference for this bill, please?
Mr. Chairman, you know, with regard to TAPS throughput issues, we think that certainly the competitiveness of Alaska is critical to increase investment and turn around the throughput decline. But competitiveness comes in a lot of different forms. And oil tax reform, we think, is the cornerstone of that. But as you see there, the four parts of our strategy focus on a number of other areas that we think are all important to turn around the TAPS throughput decline. And having a process of permitting, whether it's on the North Slope, which we'll provide examples on, but also Cook Inlet, other hydrocarbon basins. So this is not exclusively focused on the North Slope, but we think it'll have an important effect there. It'll have an important effect in other areas of the state where we're looking at oil and gas development, exploration, and production.
Thank you.
This is the strategy, Mr. Chairman. I know that others have seen that, so I won't dwell on that too long. And some of the other things that we have done with regard to permitting reform and modernization have included issues beyond statutory changes that we've requested. There's been budget increments that we've received over the last 2 years, IT overhauls. This is an issue that in many ways started with the realization that we had a huge backlog of permits in DNR and other places, and a real focus for the last 2 years to try and bring that permit backlog down while creating a system, improving a system, reforming a system that doesn't give us this again. And that's we're making decent progress on that. If you can look at that slide, we have our backlog down by 1,000 permits in about a year and a half. The goal is to get rid of that within 3 years. We'll see. We think we're on track, but you know, it'll be close. But this is really, in many ways, the impetus 2 years ago to start our focus on broader permitting reform and modernization for the state.
We have a question from Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And was part of this an effort to have permitting online with sort of uniform templates so that companies didn't have to re-enter the same data over and over? Is that what I'm remembering?
So, through the chair, Senator Gardner, one of the things that we're doing here is you look at this, backing up the slides, this unified permit project document management. That was the capital budget request that we got 2 years ago to start, at least in DNR, reforming the system from a technology standpoint. And one of the things that we're aiming for is actually to have the transparency eventually for a company or a small group or a municipality that has applied for a permit to be able to go online and actually see where that permit is in the process, to make it much more transparent. We're not there yet. It's pretty opaque, to be honest. And one of the things that we're trying to do, and again, one thing I want to mention on the permitting reform writ large that we've undertaken the last 2 years has been really strong bipartisan support. So you may remember these budget requests are pretty significant that we came in with at DNR. Got very strong bipartisan support both on the operating budget and the capital budget. So we are trying to implement those kind of reforms. We're making good progress, but we're not there yet.
Thank you.
So, and then, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but Last year, we had a bill that was introduced halfway through the session. It was really the first bill from the governor that started the incremental, because a lot of this is incremental. There's no silver bullet here on fully reforming our permitting system and modernizing it. But HB 361 did pass last session against strong bipartisan support. And in this this session, the governor has introduced, again, this will be the third bill, SB 26, which is now going to be soon in front of, I think, Senate Finance. SB 27, which was heard by Senate Finance this morning, and Commissioner Hartig and I testified to that. And then, as I mentioned, in terms of the trio of permitting reform and modernization bills, SB 59 is the third one, and this is the first committee of referral. I also wanted to mention one final thing, Mr. Chairman. As part of our permitting reform efforts that do really focus on the North Slope and TAPS, one of the elements of our strategy that I laid out there is looking at partnerships and really working closely with the different entities throughout the state and the federal government, because as we've testified before, you know, the state can do everything right on TAPS throughput issues, tax reform, permitting reform, and if we don't have a partner in the federal government with regard to helping us turn our TAPS throughput around, we're going to have issues. We're going to have problems. But one of the areas that we have made a lot of progress with, we signed an MOU with the North Slope Borough. They're a critical element of the statewide permitting with their permitting authorities, and this is one kind of public apology I'm going to make here. We have an MOU. We meet with them monthly, their whole staff. The mayor and I meet quarterly. We should have given them a much more detailed pre-brief on this permitting, because we don't see this affecting their Title 19 responsibilities, but it's important. They'll be an important part of kind of the overall comprehensive look that SB 59 will have. And I just want to mention that, because it's a really important partnership that we're working on, and we should have given them a pre-brief on that. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it over to Bill Barron and Wendy, and
quick question,
unless there are other questions.
Just before you go, Commissioner, have you instituted sort of an annual evaluation or survey with permittees and partnerships and stakeholders to ask about ideas they may have to streamline the process?
So, Mr. Chairman, back to slide six. This was our strategy that we launched about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. You look at the third part of that strategy. We have done that, and we've gone out. We've held public hearings all throughout the state in different communities, really throughout the whole state. Some there's been a lot of input. Some there hasn't been much input. We think that, and I think you're touching on this, some of the people with the best ideas here are the permittees, the people who have been through, seen some of the problems, seen some of the time delays, and we have done that, and we've done it with legislators. So a lot of this is reflective of some of those, some of that input, and but this is a multi-year process, and so we're going to continue to do that. These are really important bills, but even if we get these passed through the legislature, these three, there'll be more work to do.
I just want to commend you that it's not being done in a vacuum. Obviously, you've got a lot of Alaskans involved. This is a critical process in streamlining and moving forward. Yes, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Can you speak very briefly about the process of assessing mineral or resource potential? I know there's some information that's confidential that the companies have done, and there's some that the state has, and who does the surveys? And
sure.
We have, for example, a library for core samples.
Sure.
So what do we know, and where do we get it?
Sure. So through the chair, Senator Garner, I'll go back to slide five. So this was the strategic and critical mineral strategy that the governor launched at our summit in Fairbanks in 2011, in the fall of 2011. And if you look at that first part of that strategy there, the geological survey team under DNR again, with great support from the legislature, is in the process of conducting a three-year statewide assessment of all our strategic and critical minerals. We've been working with the USGS. We've been working with Native corporations. And what we do here is that we're out there. When we find areas that we think have potential, we essentially just make it public. And then you're referring to the Geological Materials Center. We think that's a hugely important capital budget request. It's actually not in the DNR capital budget. It's actually in the Department of Admin capital budget. But to upgrade that center, that's the center where we have all the core samples that the state has collected over decades. It's in many ways a priceless warehouse of some of the most important areas in the state, whether it's oil and gas, whether it's coal, whether it's strategic minerals that companies come to very regularly to help them make investment decisions on. So we try to make it very public, and again, the legislature has been really supportive on this three-year statewide assessment that's part of our strategic and critical minerals, and we make that public when at the appropriate times.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Welcome, Mr. Barron and Ms. Wolf. I also want to note that Ashley Brown and Becky Cruz of the Department of Law are online if we have any questions for them. Ms. Brown's in Anchorage and Ms. Cruz is in Eagle River.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Bill Barron and I'm the Director of Oil and Gas for the state. And what I'd like to do is just give a very brief introduction primarily of Wendy Wolf, who basically was a member of my unit section. And through, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, the question you asked the commissioner about, have we gone out to our clients in terms of what issues do you have or what areas can we help you do your business better? We truly believe in the DOG that the companies and the citizens are both our customers. And there are times where we are their customers and there are times where they are our customers. And it's that symbiotic relationship that we've got to establish between all three parties to progress oil and gas development in a more progressive manner. So as we sat back and talked with some of our clients, I pulled Wendy out of the units team and basically seconded her to the director's team so that she could work specifically on this project. And what this project is in dialogue with the companies and other stakeholders, the population in general, one of the things we kept hearing was two pieces. One was we want to see a better or a larger holistic approach toward what activities are going to take place in certain geographic areas. And if we had a larger, broader approach toward that holistic view, could we do public comment and public interaction and dialoguing up front rather than piecemeal as projects and programs come to the DOG's table? So what we said was, you know, that's really good insight. And in terms of general project management, you always want to try and do as much upfront planning as you possibly can before you get into execution. So in that regard, we took a real hard look at how we do area-wide leasing. And in area-wide leasing, we have a very strong program of company and stakeholder involvement up front and our best interest finding that establishes not only the areas of activities for oil and gas exploration and disposal of properties, but also mitigation efforts associated with those. We're taking that same concept, and the next logical piece is how do we establish broad views in geographic areas for exploration and then subsequently development to where we're looking at not lease by lease or track by track, but broader areas and trying to identify areas that and understanding what activities take place in those areas and get the issues up front so that companies can plan and know that they get the approval once and move on through the plan of operation. So it's basically not that we're trying to say what programs are going to take place. It's really about how those programs will take place. So, and in that regard, I'll throw the ball to Wendy, and she'll introduce herself. And she's got a really good presentation. It's about 10 to 15 slides, and if we can power through that and then come back to questions. Clearly, if you guys need questions intermittently, that's great, but it's a really smooth presentation, and it's kind of interactive, so I think it'll answer a lot of your questions up front.
We'll hold questions till the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairman.
For the record, I am Wendy Wolf. I'm with the Division of Oil and Gas. And so, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. So, basically, Senate Bill 59 takes a statutory requirement to provide public notice at the beginning of each phase. At the beginning of each phase of a project, of a multi-year project or a multi-phase project, and clarifies that the Department of Natural Resources can review each phase across a geographic area rather than conducting finite reviews on each individual project, which is the way we currently do it. So in this context, project is oil and gas development in general. And the phases are exploration, development, and transportation. Transportation meaning pipelines, not roads. The initial leasing phase occurs when we do the best interest sale, and it's a separate public process that Director Barron has described. And it's during the leasing phase that we determine that oil and gas development will occur. And the subsequent analyses that we do are how that development or how that exploration will occur. And so what SB 59 does, it allows DNR and the public to look across a broader geographical area when it's evaluating the how oil and gas development should occur on state land. SB 59 clarifies that DNR can review exploration development activities holistically in a geographic area and preserves public participation. It benefits the public because it allows the public to look at exploration and development across a broader area and provide input about how particular areas are going to be developed before development occurs. And so they're not being reactive, they're being proactive in how state lands are managed. And it benefits the industry because a company knows going into a project what parameters they need to design around for their projects, and they can prepare their plans of operations according to stipulations and conditions that are the result of this planning process. And then when they come in with their specific plans of operation, they have predictable results. They know they'll get through the process and it will be approved. DNR offers oil and gas leases in five areas across the state. They're called area-wide lease sales. Up on the North Slope, we have the North Slope, the Beaufort Sea, and the North Slope foothills. In Cook Inlet, it's one area. It's the Cook Inlet area. And then we have the Alaska Peninsula. The lease sale process begins with a preliminary decision to offer one of the lease sale areas. So I'll use North Slope as an example. And they'll come out with a preliminary decision. And there's an extensive public review process that this legislation does not affect. And then it culminates in a comprehensive final best interest decision that is signed by the director, and it's called the final finding of the director. Lots of times you'll hear us refer to BIFs and findings and things like that. We're talking about the best interest finding of the director. And the best interest finding, it's a comprehensive multi-year review process. It includes broad public notice and extensive public and agency participation. There's a thorough evaluation of impacts associated with oil and gas development based on statutory criteria, and it results in concrete mitigation measures that protect state land and address environmental concerns. And leases that are issued subsequent to a lease sale decision are subject to all those mitigation measures. So that's the first step in how the state protects its lands. That's the leasing phase. And it's during this leasing phase that DNR has made the decision to allow oil and gas development on its land. And it specifies the lease terms and mitigation measures. And it provides that public notice will be provided at the beginning of the exploration phase, the development phase, and the transportation phase. The way the division has implemented that requirement for public notice is to do a public notice at the beginning of the next phase for each individual project. And that can be an individual lease. It might be a small group of leases. But it's a repetitive process. And let me go through an example. So there's the final finding comes out, lease sale has been determined, it's in the best interest to sell the lease. A lease is sold, the lessee goes forward and develops their plans of exploration, and then they'll come in with a seismic program. And seismic program may be across multiple leases. They have that seismic program goes out for a public notice and a review process, and then if there are any special stipulations, those are added. Generally, the mitigation measures cover pretty much everything that we have to do in terms of special stipulations, but sometimes there are additional stipulations that are added as a result of this process. And then as a result of the seismic program, they come back and they go, I'm going to put in an exploration well. They have an ice road and an ice pad. They come in, again, we're talking about the same area, and we do another public notice saying they're coming in with their exploration well. This is where it is. We do the approval, and they come forth the next year, and they decide they're going to do another well in a different location. Again, it's an ice road with an ice pad. We go through the public process again. They make a discovery, which is what we all want. They work on their conceptual plans. They come into the department, and they talk about their conceptual plans, and then they come back with their initial plan of development. And again, at that point, we do a public notice with an opportunity to comment. We incorporate those comments into any special stipulations that are site-specific to this development. And then in the process of implementing their plan, they realize they need to move the facility slightly, so they come in with a modified plan. So then we go ahead and do another public review, public notice for this same lease now, and issue a modified decision. Next step would be a pipeline application will come in. It goes through an independent process. This bill does not change how pipelines would be processed. So there's a pipeline will either be adjudicated as a common carrier under 3835 or as a pipeline easement under DNR statute, which is 3805850. That process won't change. And then if they're in production, moving right along, have additional discoveries, they're going to put in a satellite pad. So they put in a satellite pad, and they come in once again for a plan of operation approval. We go out for public notice, and we do the special stipulations. Now, the guy next door decides, okay, I'm going to do the same thing. It could be concurrently with the first lease. It might be a different operator, might be the same operator. Again, we're going to go through the process again. They come in with their well pad. We do this, the whole public process again. Next year, they do it again, and you get the picture. So what Senate Bill 59 intends to do is to take a geographic area, and I'll start with the North Slope, and we would define a geographic area. These are just representative geographic areas. They're going to be larger than a lease, smaller perhaps than the lease sale area. There'll be something like in this example that I've shown, you have the eastern North Slope. That's fairly undeveloped area, and so they may have other kinds of concerns in that area. It might be separate from the core area of the North Slope that has been fully developed. So we would determine what the geographical area is. We'd identify permissible activities, and we've had a lot of experience on the temporary activities associated with exploration. There'd be ice roads and ice pads and things like that. And then we would go out with a public notice, and this would be the public's opportunity, agencies and local governments to say, great, these are the areas we want you to avoid. These are the kinds of activities we want to see. These other kinds of activities we really want to see individually. It gives us a clear picture across the board what kinds of activities are allowed. And then we would come out with a decision saying that culminates and describes all of the permissible activities. Okay. For development activities, the areas may be smaller because when you get to development, now you're talking about permanent kinds of facilities. They're going to have a life of 5, 10, 15, 30 years. And so the areas, by definition, are probably going to be smaller than your exploration areas because you're not dealing with temporary activities. So it might be a new area, a group of leases, where there's a new discovery. It might be an existing oil and gas unit that is expanding and putting in additional development activities. It might be an area that covers the core part of our legacy field. These are just hypothetical examples of what a development geographic area might look like. So on the North Slope, let's focus on a little area for leases. What would our process look like if we had this bill passed? We would have defined the geographic area. We would have come out with an exploration phase decision where we would talk about the types of activities that we would allow, the special stipulations. We would provide public notice and an opportunity to comment. And then based on the input that we receive, we would come out with a decision on the allowable exploration activities within that particular geographic area and the specific conditions that that activity can occur with, under. Then when they come in with their specific plans of operation for seismic or an exploration well, we don't do an individual public notice at each one of those steps. We still review the plans of operation, we still have to approve them, and we still need to be sure that they are in compliance with the decision that we made for the exploration phase. If they're not in compliance, if they're asking for an exception, there's something out of the norm, we can go through the public process for that. But the lion's share of the kinds of activities, what we anticipate is that they'll be covered under this, the mitigation measures and the special stipulations that would be outlined in these decisions. Then an operator, a lessee, group of lessees will come in and say, you know, we've made a discovery. They come in with a conceptual development plan, which talks to how many pads they want to put in a particular area, how many wells, where the roads will be, where the pipelines will be. There, just talk generally in terms of what their development will look like in this area. And again, we're talking those smaller areas that I was describing. So we would go out with a development phase decision. It would cover the conceptual development plans, what we were anticipating it to look like. And then when they come in with their specific plans, we would not do a public notice again, provided the specific plans are in compliance with the decisions that we made and that they're not asking for anything that wasn't approved ahead of time. The pipelines would still, as I said earlier, would go through the same process as they do now. There's no change to the way pipeline applications will be processed. So the results, to summarize, here we have a group of four leases. And we're defining this as a geographical area. We're going to go out with an exploration phase decision. We give the public a notice, an opportunity to comment. Then we will approve a decision that outlines stipulations, special conditions, what they're subject to. And then the subsequent plans of operation that come in can proceed without public notice. And so they just move through the process smoothly. Then they make a discovery, and we come out with the development phase decision. And here again, we're talking about more specific information at this point because they've come in with a conceptual design of what their development is going to look like. We make that approval. The development can occur in that area, and you don't need to do a public notice individually for each of the activities that occur at that point. Pipelines come in, and those will be done separately.
So, Mr. Chairman and committee, like the commissioner said, and as I preface this, we actually did take time to listen to our clients, and we've tried to look internally to ourselves and say what activities within the division do we do repeatedly over and over and over in the process of approving plans of operations and plans of exploration, and how can we figure out a way to mitigate the time associated with those activities, but without limiting the access to the public and protection of the state lands. And this is our approach. And looking for statutory authority to allow us to do that so that everything is really crisp and clean allows us to go forward in that manner. So we'd be happy to entertain any questions the committee might have.
Sorry. Nope. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to confirm, the department then will we've seen the designated areas that you're going to define, or you will define those future areas geographically?
Through the chair, Senator, we will establish those at a later date.
And when the public is thinking about that, we know that you're trying to streamline a process. Is there going to be any maximum threshold of how large that area geographically might be?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, we're developing regulations now that are dealing with how we do our process. It's something that we've been working on, and in that process, we can define it if that's necessary. Right now, our area-wide lease sale areas would be the maximum size an exploration area could be, but we haven't put a threshold on it, but they wouldn't be larger than a sale area because that's the maximum size that we're doing right now, and this is coupled with the lease sale decision.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And lastly then, once the area is defined, can we designate allowable exploration activities? So that will be part of whatever the public has provided comment on, the activities versus the quantity of activities that happen within the defined geographic boundary. Is that correct? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
Okay. Senator McGuire had a question.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. How much time do you think, let's just take an example, well, I'll let you come up with one. How much time do you think that we'll be saving the average project? And then associated, have you thought about the time value of money? Just to give an example for public.
Through the chair, Senator, in general, each one of those steps is about a 60 to 90 day process at each one of those steps.
Wow.
So by looking at it in a holistic manner, in a broader area, and we still have to review the plan, we still have to engage our fellow agencies in terms of specifics. The companies still have to get appropriate permits, for example, AOGCC permit to drill, they still have to get all those. But in order to approve the plan, each one of those steps is between 60 and 90 days.
So if I might follow up.
Certainly.
So how many steps, so how many 60-day steps have we consolidated?
Go back to your slide.
I think we should know.
Through the chair, Senator, if we go back and count those, it is through the development phase in order of probably 7 or 8.
Wow.
So that's a significant, and this is over a threshold of time. It's not all,
right.
But that's kind of the point, is the companies now know that these are the activities that are approved. You follow the program, you know where you can do your work. Go, you know, put your plan in, your plan's approved quickly in a much more streamlined manner. That time element is then truncated off the process.
Like a year and a half.
In theory, yes, ma'am.
Wow. Well, I just, through the chair, I just make the point that that might be a great talking point to add in your presentation, how much you're eliminating in terms of time in the process and then the time value of money. Because that is something that in the Australia model I think has been touted as an advantage, that you start out on these projects and you've got the price of steel, the price of all the things that come into it, and by the time you get through the permitting process, now you've got this advanced price on a project. So something to think about. That's excellent.
Just to follow up on that, Senator, I think when you think about the reputation of Alaska and how difficult in some cases it is to do business here. Oil taxes aren't the only issue. Reducing the marginal cost of a project, which is our ultimate goal of reducing, becoming competitive with oil taxes, marginally, this could have as large an effect.
Yes, sir, it would.
Other questions? I have a...
Go ahead. No. I'll wait.
Okay. I always look at both sides of an issue. Is it possible that, assuming that there is no license given to reduce our strict environmental requirements, okay, so we're going to look at the same issues, the commonality to a geographic area, we'll be looking at wetlands and archaeological resources and sensitive and critical areas the same way we always would. Is there a chance that, there's a new lease sale, you're expecting development, the department goes out and goes through a pretty extensive exercise to evaluate a geographic area, Is there the potential that we're evaluating prematurely and at an unnecessary cost to the state if there's no activity in that lease area?
Through the chair, that's an interesting question, and I would refer to a couple of areas that we have gone through that process and have had little interest in our lease sales, and that being the foothills and the Alaska Peninsula. That being said, while we have gone through that effort, and it was, again, the time value of money for the state, I would also present that that work has been done, and specifically in the foothills area, which common geologic theory right now is that it's more gas prone than oil. I think there's a few companies out there that might have an alternate opinion, which is wonderful. Those activities are the potential of those lease sales actually are going to be incredibly robust, in my opinion, and I think others in the division share that, as soon as we have authorization for a gas line so we can get the product out to market. So those activities have already been done. That's kind of sunk capital for the state. But once we are ready to go and those lands have been offered, everything is ready to go. There is no hesitation. There's no hesitation on the state's part. It's done and it's ready. And that, in my mind, again, from a project management and an organizational process, let's be ahead of it. Let's be ready for it. And let's move when we can move and not delay the activities even further.
Okay. I imagine you would visit with those that may have been successful in the lease process to get a basic idea of their plans so that it was timed accordingly with their development.
Yes, sir. That would be the intent.
Senator Perkla.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see on page 1, line 11, that the method of notifying the public is under AS 3805, 945, B and C, and so I have that statute pull. And one of the places that you would post so that the general public would know that you're going through this process would be Alaska's online public notice system and that it needs to be posted there for 30 days. So first, that's correct?
Correct.
I have the right place in statute. Could you tell us, I'm going through this and it says other areas, but for those listening at home that might not be familiar with our outreach when we go into this, could you tell me where you place public service announcements for remote areas like you've shown us in maps today?
Yes, Senator Fairclough, through the chair. What we do is we put notices in local post office, we put it in their local newspapers, we do it on the local radio stations if there are radio stations. I don't know that we do local TV. I think we just do the local radio stations, the local newspapers, again, the post office, and the regional post office or the regional papers. And then we also notify the local governments if there's a village and there's the village corporation and there's a city corporation, you would notify both. So it's fairly extensive, and we try to do that outreach, particularly if the area is the village is within the area or close to the area. So up on the North Slope, we routinely, if you're doing something in the western portion of the North Slope, you're contacting Nuitsik and Barrow, and if you're doing something to the east, you're contacting Kaktovik, I think. So, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, so you would we would personally, as a state, then reach out to the local municipality, or we would go to a community council if it was an urban area like that and talk to that government body. We would reach out to a regional corporation if their boundaries were touched or if they were involved in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. We'd reach out to a village corporation, a postmaster of a permanent settlement of more than 25 people, a nonprofit organization or someone who expressed interest and asked us to notify them. That would all still remain in place under this bill.
Through the chair, yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
What I have to say is just my last job before this one was being a small town mayor, and with all the work that's going on in Cook Inlet, I would have to work hard to ignore the notifications from your department, so I think you do a very good job. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions, comments? I have one more quick one, just to help Alaskans to feel more comfortable. If you evaluate a geographic area and it's relatively oil and gas activity specific, if you have a significantly more intrusive activity, like a mining activity, you're going to reevaluate.
Mr. Chairman, this bill does not address mining activities. Okay. It's only and exclusively associated with oil and gas.
So if the conditions change significantly or if it's...
It would be a relook from a different agency and a different perspective.
And I'm hesitating to mention a brand name, but just I suggest you're reviewing some MOC software by a company named KMS for a web-based permitting solution that I've used in the past. It's you can attach all the documents, you can have pre-populated fields, but it's very effective for folks that could respond in a web-based environment.
No, appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
You bet.
Thank you.
KMS. Again, hate to mention a brand name, but haven't seen better. And we're going to, we have about 10 minutes. We're going to open public testimony in case there's anyone here so that we'll have two opportunities for public testimony. So, Mr. Barron and Ms. Wolf, I want to commend you on a very concise presentation that answered all of the questions. So perhaps you can work with the commissioner to polish some of his up in the future. But with that, I want to thank you. That's a joke. And see if there's anyone here that would like to testify either in the room or online. No? Okay, well, we will make sure that we get the word out for public testimony prior to the next meeting, which will be held at 3:30 p.m. on Tuesday, March 5th in this room, Butrovich Room 205. The meeting is adjourned at 4:22. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.